The media is being surprisingly quiet. I guess we're just waiting for open strikes to take place again from Iran. Haberman reveals how Netanyahu pushed Trump to hit Iran. Oh, is it not an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory? CNN? That Israel dragged us into this war? I was under the impression it was an anti-Semitic conspiracy theory that Israel dragged us into this war.
You and your co-author Jonathan Swan have an excerpt from your new book, Regime Change: Inside the Imperial Presidency of
Always
Donald
a
Trump,
book.
In the New York Times today. It's fascinating. You describe in it a situation or a meeting where Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu gave a detailed pitch for going to war with Iran. Do you think the public fully grasps just how influential Netanyahu was in President Trump's decision to attack Iran? What have you learned?
So our reporting, Anderson, for the book, and this is our first excerpt from it, the book comes out in June, but relates to how this particular lead-up period, and I think it's important to underscore, and again, we write about this today, Jonathan and I do, that the president and Bibi Netanyahu have actually been much more aligned in certain ways over a very long period of time than certainly a lot of the president's base of supporters want to see, and then some of his own advisors either recognize or want to admit. And if you look back at his first term, President Trump's term, you know, the strike on General Soleimani was something that a lot of people opposed around him. He really didn't have any hesitation about doing it and just did it. There were some people who were thrilled that he did it. It had repercussions, right? I mean, Iran has been looking to go after him in one way or another ever since, and it has escalated tensions there. But it shouldn't really be a surprise if you look at the decade-long relationship. When Bibi Netanyahu came to this Situation Room meeting with the president and—
Them calling him Bibi is so fucking stupid. Like Thana says, it's an attempt to humanize him. Trump does the same thing, you know?
The president's senior advisor.
Just a cutesy nickname for Adolf Hitler, you know?
On February 11th, it's pretty extraordinary, Anderson, because it is clearly unusual for a foreign leader to be in this kind of an in-person meeting in the Situation Room. It certainly speaks to the magnitude of it. But Netanyahu was laying out a number of different ways in which they believed this could go, that a war could go, and it would involve taking out ballistic missile capacity. It would involve Iran not attacking its neighbors so aggressively. It would involve Iran not choking off, you know, minimal likelihood of choking off the Strait of Hormuz. And then there was the possibility of regime change, the change that it could happen. He played a video of possible options for who could take over if there was, you know, some change or disruption to the clerical leadership in Iran, although most of the Americans didn't really favor the people that he was talking about, or some of the people he was talking about. So he didn't suggest this all as, if this, then this is the absolute outcome. But certainly, President Trump was impressed by what he heard. He didn't completely say yes right there, but he did say, sounds good to me, or something to that effect.
That sounds like a yes, but okay.
To the prime minister, and it was clear that that was a likely green light. It was clear to the president's advisors that he was impressed with what they saw. The next day, there was an overnight assessment that was done by U.S. intelligence officials, and there were aspects of what Netanyahu described that could be done, but the regime change scenarios...
It's such a banal and neutral way of... Because we looked at this yesterday, didn't we? We looked at the contents of this book. To be clear... Netanyahu, and this is incredibly rare, entered the Situation Room not to describe or to engage with an ongoing conflict, but to pitch a new one. And uniquely for Trump, Trump did not sit at the head of the Situation Room table like he always does. Instead, he sat opposite Netanyahu as equals in the White House Situation Room. And then Netanyahu lied and pitched Trump on this war, and all of Trump's advisors said, don't trust him, this is not correct, and then Trump went with it anyway. That is what happened. That textually, that's what, none of what I just described is an exaggeration at all. All of that happened.
Described by the CIA director as farcical, and by the Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, as bullshit. And so that is where it becomes a conflation of
CIA, head of state, vice president, everyone told Trump, this is not a good idea, do not start a war with Iran, Netanyahu's pitch is not accurate, and then Trump did it anyway. I don't know, like, how do you not... And again, this is the same network that said it was anti-Semitic to say Israel dragged us into this war just a month ago. from the New York Times, Mr. Trump sat down not in his usual position at the head of the room's mahogany conference table. Instead, he took a seat on one side facing the large screens mounted along the wall. Are you fucking kidding me? In the White House Situation Room.
A lot of different points. Most notably was that J.D. Vance was the most adamant voice against doing this in the president's circle and repeatedly said this in front of his colleagues to the president.
Because he wants to be able to run in 2028.
Fascinating. Maggie Hibbern, thanks very much.
I want to start
But note how neutrally she presented all of that here on CNN. You know what I mean? Like, the news coming out here, the reports contained within this book are shocking. But it's described with such banality. Did you even get everything that I described in this? Did she accurately convey the information as reported on by the New York Times here? Do you think that she did?
Some of the reporting that they have on the ambivalence that was in the room. Mr. Rubio, of course, the Secretary of State and National Security Advisor, indicated to colleagues that he was CNN. Much more ambivalent. Ms. Wiles, Susie Wiles, Chief of Staff, had concerns about what a new conflict overseas could entail, but she did not tend to weigh in hard on military matters in large meetings. General Kane, the Joint Chiefs Chair, was not a political loyalist, and he had serious concerns about a war with Iran, but he was very cautious in the way he presented his views to the president.
What's fascinating about all that reporting...
Got to be very cautious when criticizing Israel. Very cautious. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is group that together with also how some of the... how the IC community, how Ratliff and also Rubio pushed back on the briefing that these top officials got from the Israelis mm-hmm. as well. You did have officials saying, in this story, Marco Rubio basically dismissing, you know, this report. Others saying that the Israelis have a tendency to exaggerate in this briefing. Go ahead.
Let me just put sort of a little meat on that bone real quick. So what you're talking about also in this report is Prime Minister Netanyahu went into the White House on February 11th and gave some very bold, optimistic assessments of what could...
Lied. He lied.
Happen if the U.S. and Israel went to war there.
Into the Situation Room, by the way.
Into the Situation Room, thank you. Right. Yeah. So you have the Israeli Prime Minister in the Situation Room with this small group of people, including the fact that it could bring an end to the Islamic regime. And what you were saying, this according to the reporting, when Mr. Trump joined the meeting of the U.S. intelligence officials after that Netanyahu briefing, Mr. Ratcliff briefed him on the assessment. The CIA director used one word to describe the Israeli prime minister's regime change scenarios: farcical. At that point, Mr. Rubio cut in. In other words, it's bullshit.
I think that is really important to highlight, right? Especially if we're going to talk about the ambivalence that people had to express a dissenting view, you know, to the president, because you did have doubts there. But those doubts weren't forcefully argued mm-hmm. to the president, right? And we've talked often, you know, going back to last year, about how loyalty is such a measure of success in this administration. And I've often had a reporting target of how does that translate in
bullshit analysis? Yeah, because CNN is nominally anti-Trump, but can never truly be anti-Israel. They're going to frame this as like an inter-Republican dynamic. Which to an extent it is, but they're not going to focus on another element, which is that a so-called ally of the United States lied to us to pitch us into a war that's having devastating global consequences. They'll treat this as like, oh, look at how like deferential Republicans are to Trump, and not how deferential we all are to Israel.
These meetings where you would expect a back and forth and a counter argument to be presented and then another argument to be presented? Or is it that some of the most powerful, influential people in government are really just focused on at times telling the president what he does rather than what he does not want to hear, right? And this reporting was so important because on something as pivotal as whether or not to go to war, it really seemed like the only person who presented that counter argument was the vice president, was J.D. Vance.
And Shelby, let me read you part of that reporting. In front of his colleagues, Mr. Vance warned Mr. Trump that a war against Iran
CNN,
could cause regional chaos and untold numbers of casualties. It could also break apart Mr. Trump's political coalition and would be seen as a betrayal by many voters who had bought into the promise of new wars.
Yeah, the vice president. The president seems to have been the most forceful one in the room and sort of laying out more clearly what everybody else was trying to quietly expressed to the president. And so, you know, I do think that there was clearly some effort to say, hey, hold on, what about this? What about this? But I think that at the end of the day, there's a few aspects. A, the people around Trump this time around are very careful. So even when they express their opinions, I think sometimes it's curbed. And they aren't as forceful as, say, the vice president. But I also think that the president had already made up his mind. And I think that there was an acknowledgement.
Not even like engaging with Israel's role in this. Like, Israel might as well have not even been there. Like, the reporting, the information in the book contained was about Israel pitching this war to us, a claim that CNN previously said was anti-Semitic to make. And they're not talking about Israel at all. It's like they weren't even involved.
Among the room and among this group of advisors in particular that, okay, well, you know, we'll say there are some risks to this, but at the end of the day, as that reporting notes, the team around Donald Trump, at the end of the day, whenever he does something, they'll voice their opinion, they'll say something, but if he wants to do it, they go ahead with it. Yeah. And this is a clear example, yeah, even something as huge as going to war with Iran.
Yeah, which, I mean, that is actually in keeping with the way most administrations mm-hmm. are. I mean, he's the president, he was elected, they weren't, and so forth. I do think...
Just normal. It's just normal. No congressional vote, the president being told by every single one of his advisors this is a bad idea, the only people saying it's a good idea being representatives from Israel, and then him doing it anyway. Yeah, just normal. Thank you, Dana Fash. Appreciate that.
The Jesus fact Christ. That the...
It's insane. They want you... You're living in a fucking asylum, man. You're in a straitjacket. They feed you pills so you don't realize it. It's fucking crazy, dude.
U.S. intelligence agencies push back about the notion of any idea of regime change from this. Maybe speaks to why the U.S. goal at the beginning and still now wasn't. They were saying regime change would be nice, but it's not part of our goal.
But I also, so there's the intel side yeah. of the briefing that Israel presented, and as you're saying, yeah. that many in the U.S. were skeptical of from the U.S. intel community. But I think it also exposes this reporting, the political divide yeah. that exists, because both so much criticism on the right and the left, and I don't mean just what J.D. Vance said about you promised no new wars, but it's about Israel leading the U.S.
What the fuck, Israel, what the fuck do they have to do with this? What are you talking about, man?
Into this. That is the core mm-hmm. of the critique on the right and the left of Trump's foreign policy in this moment in time. And I think that this, you know, having Netanyahu in the Situation Room, the tightness around this, to me, exposes the heart of that concern.
And real quick, one of the right wing's most ardent opponents of the state of Israel is Tucker Carlson. Mm-hmm. And in this reporting, it says that Tucker went to speak to the president about this. Mr. Trump, who had known Mr. Carlson for years, tried to reassure him. Excuse me, they talked on the phone. I know you're worried about it, but it's going to be okay, the president said. Mr. Carlson asked how he knew, because it always is. And I think that's another dynamic here that we can't push aside, which is...
He brought up Israel, and notice how she immediately pivoted to a different subject. I thought she was going to interject to defend Israel in some way, but she took the other route, which was to pivot away from it completely. What does Tucker Carlson have to do with the outrageous dynamic here? The president ignoring the advice of every single one of his advisors, everyone around him saying, don't do this, and instead listening to Israel.
That
fuck me,
the president feels so emboldened, or at least felt so emboldened by in this first.
No, she pivoted to someone who they've established as an anti-Semite. That's true. That's true. By pivoting to Tucker Carlson, who is an anti-Semite, of course, they're like, ah, well, you know who else thought it was a bad idea to bomb Iran? You know,
term getting out Soleimani by the operation in Venezuela, both of which were so different from what he embarked on with Iran. But that was a part of his thinking as he went into this operation.
Do you think Democrats' calls to impeach will go anywhere? No. Some of the comments get it? They're probably bots. Dems are pussies and powerless? Well, I mean, she's hardly a Democrat.